Punjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Tirivaradhari. Jai Gopi Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanchari. Yamuna Tira Vanchari. Ungalya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. By Paramahansa Bhaktacharya Disturbed Sri Srimadha Divine Grace Sri Desi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Jai. ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya Sri Prabhupada Jai. Jai Om Snubhad Paramahansa Bhaktacharya Disturbed Sri Srimadha His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Ananda Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Sri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Sunday Feast Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Hare Krishna, everybody. Thank you for coming on this wonderful Sunday in Alachua. Now we've gone from weather that's in the upper 30s now into the 80s. This is much more comfortable. And tonight I'd like to explore a little bit about pramana, and means like evidence, things that we accept as authorities, and epistemology, how we know what we know, and how we can be sure about transcendental knowledge, which is otherwise beyond our can, or our understanding, the reach of our senses. So if we can bring up our little slideshow. I knew we should have tested it before. Well, I'm going to start describing. It's very simple, and then hopefully we'll get the visual there. This is the famous frog in the well analogy. And Srila Prabhupada would often use this little story to illustrate how we become illusioned about what we think we can know. Close. Back. That's it. Okay, very good. So this is a parable for our time, and actually for any time. And so the story begins. We have just a few slides, so we have to fill it out. There's this Professor Frog, and you can see he has his lab coat on there. And he knows everything about his 6 foot well. He studied it. He knows the history. He knows the dimensions. He knows what it's made of, in ins and outs. And one day, next slide, a very athletic frog. You can see he's got his tennis shoes on there. He was able to get out of the well. He jumped out of the well, and it turns out the well was quite near the Atlantic Ocean. So he explored here and there, and then he came to the shore of the ocean, and his jaw dropped. He'd never seen anything like it. Such a huge body of water. And so, being very astute, he went back to the well and jumped back in and wanted to report to the Professor Frog. So there he is. He's trying to describe the dimensions of the Atlantic Ocean to the professor, who's completely sure that he knows everything about everything. So he said, it's huge, huge body of water. So the frog said, oh, this isn't why my well is 4 feet. Is it 8 feet? What? He said, no, you don't understand. Much, much bigger. And he said, oh, maybe it's 12 feet. Why? That's really big. He said, no, it's way beyond that. And it kept big and big. And finally, this frog, in his attempt to understand, he puffed himself up and he exploded, as frogs will want to do. And so this leads, now go to the next. So this leads to this point that Srila Prabhupada would make. If you really want to see a nice description of this, go to the introduction to the Ishopanishad. Prabhupada describes the importance of the Vedas there. So this is the science of epistemology. How can we know what we know? How do we know what we know? And how can we be sure that it's accurate? Now, in our present state, we have these four defects which prevent us from understanding what we call transcendental knowledge. That is, which is beyond the reach of the material senses and mind. The problem is that we, in our illusion, we take this to be the only way of knowing, what Prabhupada called the ascending means of knowledge. It's basically the scientific method. And with our imperfect senses, as illustrated here, and go to the next slide. These are our five senses. All of them are limited. Clearly, we can only see a certain amount. Our touch is limited. Fragrance, taste, certainly hearing is limited. And so, next slide. For instance, the human eye can only see a small portion of the electromagnetic spectrum. There's so many other things that we don't see. Like right here in this room now, there are so many stations being transmitted, right? Television stations, radio stations, so many things going on. The NSA probably has it, watching everything. But we don't understand any of it until we have the tuner, known as the television, then suddenly we can see. But in our present state, we have no idea of even this material vibrations of reality. What to speak of those things that are beyond what we call transcendental. So go on. Now, because we have these imperfect senses, we tend to make mistakes. For instance, next slide, the towering intellect, Aristotle, thought that the function of the brain was to cool the blood. We know now that it has a little more function, right? But he was such a prominent figure in his time, I'm sure he convinced a lot of other people that that was the function of the brain. Big mistake, right? And then the next slide, because we are prone to make mistakes, in perfect senses, the tendency to make mistakes, we're prone to illusion. And here's an example in the next slide. We've all seen mirages while driving on a hot day. I know that in my area, in San Diego, if you go out into the desert, it's a common thing to see. It looks like there's water on the road, but when you get there, there's no water. So this is actually in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described like that. In the Kura's prayers, he's saying, I'm just like a foolish animal who runs after a mirage in the desert. You know what the word for mirage is? Mriga Krishna. That which the animal thirsts after. The animals are an illusion. They actually run after it. And therefore, in the same way, I've turned away from you, my Lord, and I've forgotten completely about you. So this whole world is somewhat like a mirage. It seems to be very real, but we learn from the Bhagavad Gita that because it's temporary, it doesn't have nasato vidite bhavo for the asat. There is no actual, it's more or less a phantasmagoria, as Prabhupada would say. So that mirage and illusion, this extends to so many things in this material world. but we're absolutely convinced that they're true. And the biggest mistake that we make is thinking that we're this body, isn't it? It's practically universal, except for a few Hare Krishnas. Huh? We know we're not the body, aham brahmasmi. But how do we know? We'll get to that in a little while. Now, when we believe, next slide, when we believe our illusions or have a vested interest in others believing them, then we cheat by teaching them as the truth. This is, Srila Prabhupada would give the example of the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis may believe that the ultimate is Brahman, or they may have a vested interest in thinking that. They're afraid of accepting the reality of a form after this one, because they know that that form is the cause of pain. And so they teach it as the absolute truth. And it has a tremendous effect. Prabhupada would give the example of Vivekananda, who came very eloquent, very learned, but an impersonalist. At the end of the previous century, I forget the year, 1896 or 8 something, he came to Chicago, gave a very impressive speech, and convinced many to take up an impersonal path, that you are God, you are the absolute truth, you are, you know, like that. So this is called cheating. Without actually knowing the truth, we teach things as certain. And you find it legion in universities today, teaching Darwinian evolution. You know, as soon as you... Our philosophy is very much intelligent design. Intelligent design is poo-pooed in the universities. Oh, that's just a covering for creationism. But actually, how could it not be intelligent? I mean, probably even a child can see, walking on the street, if something is, a watch has fallen, he doesn't think, oh, it just grew up by the side of the road. Somebody created it. When you see the wonderful precision in which the universe is working, or our own bodies, which are a marvel of creation, of incredible creation, that ask any doctor, there's so many horizons of knowledge that they haven't crossed yet, even though they know so much. So, obviously, there's an intelligence behind it. But those who have a vested interest in deriding God or removing God from the equation, they teach this, and the world is filled with cheaters and cheated today. So, example of the cheating for the next slide. Piltdown Man. I remember learning about Piltdown Man. Maybe I learned the history of Piltdown Man. Piltdown Man, discovered in 1912 in Britain, was thought to be a missing link between ape and man, till the fraud was exposed in 1953. So that for 41 years, this was taught throughout the world, and young children grew up to believe it, and then they had to discard it. And there's so many things like that going on. So, therefore, then the conclusion to this is, therefore, to find out genuine knowledge concerning ultimate questions of the origin of man and the universe, or the nature of the soul and the supreme soul, one must access a source of knowledge beyond these four imperfections. And, next slide, this is why we have the parampara. Perfect knowledge descends from the perfect source, Krishna, through a chain of realized teachers and disciples whose spoken and written words form reliable books of knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada's great mission, you remember the wonderful saga of how Srila Prabhupada came to land on these shores and start the Krishna consciousness movement. He struggled for so many years in India. He was writing. He was always transmitting the knowledge as it is. He even had a Bhagavad Gita that I think the manuscript was stolen. I think it was stolen in India, if I'm not mistaken. But then he came to America only when he had those books in hand, the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He felt he really had something substantial, and then he felt secure that the movement would be successful. And we know the history. He was so eager to have his books published and distributed, because this forms a source of knowledge that can actually give people the ultimate instruction that they need for their benefit. These teachers and these books are the basis of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So with that as a prelude, I wanted to explore a couple of verses at the end of the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Now, as you know, the 16th chapter deals with the divine and the demoniac natures. And at the first few verses, Krishna describes about 28 qualities
of the divine qualities. Abhayam sattvasam shuddhir, such as fearlessness, purification, charity, all of these different qualities. And then he says to Arjuna, I've described these to you, now I'm going to describe the demoniac qualities. And he begins to do that, and finally he says, these are the qualities that bring one down, that cause one to suffer in this world. And then at the end of the chapter, he describes two verses that describe the importance of Shastra. Text 16, and I'm just going to chant both of these. Some of you may know them, but before I do, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'm going to read a couple of verses from the Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 16, text 23 and 24, and then we'll read just a portion of one of the purports here and explore. So some of you may know, Yakshastra Vidam Utsridya Vartate Kamakarataha Nasa Siddhim Avapnoti Nasukham Naparam Gatim. One who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to one's whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. And the final verse in the chapter, Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vivastito Gyatva Shastra Vidhanoktam Karma Karta Miharhasi. One should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that one may gradually be elevated. And I'm just going to read one paragraph in the purport to the first verse. Last paragraph. Prabhupada says, the word kamakarataha in the first verse is very significant. A person who knowingly violates the rules acts in lust. He knows that this is forbidden, but still he acts. This is called acting whimsically. He knows that this should be done, but still he does not do it. Therefore, he is called whimsical. Such persons are destined to be condemned by the Supreme Lord. Such persons cannot have the perfection which is meant for the human life. The human life is especially meant for purifying one's existence, and one who does not follow the rules and regulations cannot purify himself, nor can he attain the real stage of happiness. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshur Unniditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So these two verses, I always really regarded as very significant and essential in the Bhagavad Gita. They're all essential, but this somehow always struck me. And because they establish the importance, the overall overriding importance of the Shastra, of the word that Krishna is speaking in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is coming down to us so we can understand it through the parampara, through our own spiritual masters, and through Srila Prabhupada, and all the way back to Krishna. So I've been hearing every day, I listen to a lecture by Srila Prabhupada, and I happen to be hearing today, he's speaking on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a select number of lectures he gave, maybe a couple of dozen. Mostly he gave Gita and Bhagavatam. But here, this was really early on, 1966, and he's describing how Sanatana Goswami surrendered to Lord Chaitanya, and ask him, you know, ke ami, kene yama, tari japa, try. That, who am I? Why are the threefold miseries causing me so much trouble? If I don't understand this, then what's the use of all my erudition? He was honored. He was a great scholar. But he had been actually coerced into serving into the Muslim government in Bengal. So he was taking the role, even though he knew everything as Lord Chaitanya, he's taking the role of someone who recognizes the need for higher instruction in order to really achieve the ultimate goal of life. And the fact of the matter is that most people have no idea what that ultimate goal is. He makes this point also, and others do in this position. I don't even know the right questions to ask. So you please advise me in the right questions to ask and then give me the answers to it. So universally, in every living entity, not even just human beings, they're trying to increase our happiness, our security, and to minimize suffering. Isn't it? Even the little insects, you see, they're on a mission. An ant is on a mission to find something sweet, you know. And if you stop his path, suddenly that's a crisis. He goes, has a strategy for dealing with that. If he finds some sugar, this is like his ananda, his bliss. He goes back home, tells it, and then they have a big line coming, right? And this is life. They're the same jiva as we are. Very rudimentary standard of what is happiness. But still, it's the same thing. In our condition, in the conditioned state, human beings, we're also trying to increase our happiness and decrease our misery. But as Krishna points out in the Bhagavad Gita, any so-called pleasure that comes to an end is simply binding, is a source of misery. Yehi sansparjaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. This is one of the most revolutionary statements you'll ever hear. But who knows it, except, you know, those who study the Gita. What he says there is that the very pleasures that you enjoy with your senses, and the mind is also a chief source of sense gratification. Mind is a sixth sense. There's so many subtle pleasures and gross pleasures. So all of them are sources of misery. Dukkha yonai evate. And the main problem with this sense pleasure, it has a beginning and an end. And the fact that it has an end is itself a sign that it's a source of misery. Because you still want it. You're still longing for whatever pleasure it may be. And if you can't get it, that's a source of misery. So, but the principle of wanting to be happy and peaceful forever, that's a sign that we're spirit souls, that we're satchidananda. We're searching for that state that we've lost since we came from the spiritual world. We're searching for it in the material world. And we're covered over. Our knowledge is covered by lust, by material desire. Krishna makes it very plain at the end of the third chapter. So how can we get out of this dilemma if we don't even know we're in a dilemma, if we think that this is just life, you see? So that's where the intervention comes in. This is where the great acharyas, the Lord himself, comes down, he says in the fourth chapter, whenever there's a discrepancy in dharma. And we know that real dharma is that which can awaken our understanding and our practice of those principles that can really get us out of this and back to our natural state, where we can have ultimate happiness, sukham, perfection, and the supreme goal. So that's Krishna. He comes himself, he sends his emissaries, he leaves his books. There's a beautiful verse by Uddhava. I won't give you the Sanskrit, but what he's saying basically, my dear Lord, in the Uddhava Gita, this is Bhagavad Gita, Uddhava Gita is similar, it expands on many of the same themes. And he's saying, my dear Lord, the great souls and devotees, even if they had a lifetime of Brahma, they couldn't fully express their gratitude to you. Because you appear in two forms, within and without. Within as a super soul and outside as the acharya, in order to show your the path back to you. To clean away impurities and show them the path back to you. So Krishna is reaching out to us. He doesn't forget us. We forget him, but he never forgets us. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the eternal well-wisher of every living entity. Sudidam sarva bhutana. And that well-wisher means he's planning, he's trying, how can I get these fools and rascals to turn again to me and come back? Because we're his children. So one of the main ways is that he leaves his book, and he leaves it in the hands also of those who will properly follow it, interpret it, and teach it, and those who call acharyas. So here he's saying, and he's giving us very good instruction, that the shastra vidhi, every word is important. Vidhi means instruction, the do's and don'ts. In every discipline, there are do's and there are don'ts. Do chant Hare Krishna. Do come to the temple. Do take the prasadam and do all of these things. And don't, you know, take intoxication, don't have illicit sex, gambling, these things, meat eating. So that's examples. There are many other do's, many other don'ts. So these are Shastravidhi. One who disregards them. Utsvijja means forgets all about them and simply acts according to material desire. But the kama karataha, Prabhupada said this is so significant. Then what's the result? Nasa siddhim avapnoti. You cannot attain perfection in that way. You cannot attain real happiness, and you certainly can't attain the supreme goal. So it is our responsibility as devotees to keep that fire burning of desire to achieve the ultimate happiness and achieve the ultimate goal of going back to Godhead. Because this is an impetus for our practicing spiritual life. I like to point out that our shastra is filled with both of these inspirations, of these incentives for practice. One is, Krishna's all attractiveness. You come here and you see these fabulous deities, just melt your heart if you just let them. You know, what could you conceive that would be more beautiful than really Radhe Shyam and Gaur-Nitai and Krishna Balaram? I came here many years before Krishna Balaram were installed, and when they were installed, I just was overwhelmed by the beauty. So this is Krishna's come. He's volunteered to come through the agency of his sincere devotees who serve him and keep everything pure and spotless, so that he can easily attract you. Anyone can walk in here and be attracted. So this is one way. But the most important way, of course, is the holy name. The holy name is accessible to anyone at any time. The deities, of course, you can take pictures and everything, but really the holy name is the main avatar of this age. And there are so many, there's no hard and fast rules for chanting. Anyone who chants anytime, any place is going to be benefited enormously. Just chanting one name, this removes so many lifetimes of sin. We don't even realize the benefit. But to get the ultimate goal of the chanting, which is pure love for Krishna, which will take you back to Godhead, to the Loka Vrindavan, that's a little more difficult. That means we have to learn how to chant offenselessly. So this is what our great acharyas, such as Rupa Goswami, have given us in their shastra. Nana shastra vachara naika vidano sabdharma sanstapaka. In that song, by studying all these shastras, these great intellects and devotees have gleaned the essence and provided books such as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Srila Prabhupada gave us his natural devotion. Bhagavad Gita, these purports are gleaned from the writings of from Baladev Vidyabhushan and others. Srila Prabhupada dedicated the book to them, and he's following. It's all coming from the Goswamis, from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gaura Vani Pracharane, sounds familiar. So it's our responsibility to embrace these Shastravidhis, these instructions from Srila Prabhupada's books, to read them, revere them, study them, if possible, hear classes, and to accept them in our hearts. And in this way, we can make progress toward the ultimate goal and real happiness. Real happiness means it does not end. Where can that be? Only with Krishna. You can't find that here. It's not in the senses. So the training is, we want to, before our next departure from this particular body, to be taking our pleasure wholly and solely in service to Krishna, and in hearing about him, thinking about him, serving him, and praying to him. Because that we can continue to do. Now the final verse of the chapter, Krishna kind of strikes it home. He finishes the argument. Therefore, Prabhupada loved that word, therefore. Therefore, Krishna uses it. Chastram pramanam te karya karya vavastato. This idea of pramana. Pramana is very important in our philosophy. Jiva Goswami talks about it in the Tattva Sandarbha at the beginning. He spends a good part establishing Srimad Bhagavatam as the ultimate pramana. You have to trust something for, as a guide, what to do or what not to do. Most people have this TV show, it's Fox News, their own senses, what my friend told me. In other words, fallible. They're being cheated, left and right. But Shastra is the real pramana. And not just Shastra, but Shastra as given by realized soul. That's why this is Bhagavad Gita as it is. What do you get the evidence to do? What to do and what not to do? Karya and akarya, devastata. And then he just finishes the argument. And having understood it, you actually have to follow it. Understanding what the Shastra Vidhi is, then karma karta miharasi, accept it as a duty. Knowing that in the ultimate end, this duty that you accept will bring you to a state beyond all duty. The gopis and the Krishna certainly doesn't have any duty in the spiritual world, neither do the gopis. It's all simply a spontaneous love. And we can experience the beginning of that here. When you become steady in devotional service, you nicely, the holy name becomes sweeter and sweeter. You don't have to think, oh, I've got to chant. You know, I've got to get up and chant. You want to chant. Mararam mararevyoti mangalevyoti mangalam. It says of sweet things, the holy name is the sweetest ever. And you say, well, I don't taste it so sweet. I'm kind of falling asleep. Yes, because our senses are covered by the bile of ignorance, according to Rupa Goswami. In other words, we have to recognize we're in a diseased state, but we can be cured by the proper medicine. But that means, as in any course of medicine or treatment, sometimes there is austerity. It's a little bitter at first, getting up early so you have enough time to chant in good consciousness and all these things that Srila Prabhupada has given us. So when we accept them, and we accept them as duty. Duty means something that we know we should do or should not do. That's also duty. And we actually do it. It's given by a higher authority. That's why no one can give Krishna any duty. You know, whatever he does, he accepts on himself. He's given himself his own mission. Fine. But we are not like that. We're very minute. We're helpless. We're in a helpless state of mind. Recently in the morning class, we've been reading about some wonderful verses by Uddhava, where he says, and I hope I won't get in trouble for quoting the Sanskrit. Is it okay? All right, because they gave me these guidelines. But this verse is so graphic. It says, Dashtam Janam. Uddhava is praying to Krishna. He's taking the role, you know, of ourselves. This is Prahlad does in his prayers. But very important. He said, Dashtam Janam Sampatitam Bilesmin Kalahinat Shuddha Sukhoru Tasham Samudharayam Kupayapa Vargaya Vatubhara Sinsha Mahanubhava. So he's saying, in the role of a conditioned soul, he says, oh, my dear Lord, I've been bitten by the snake of time, and I've fallen into this snake hole, of the material world. And this snake of time is here, and I'm being bitten. But in spite of that, I still am maintaining a strong desire, a thirst for insignificant sense gratification. So please completely lift me out of this hole by sprinkling upon me your nectarian words, which will bring liberation. This is such a significant verse. It could be chanted before every Bhagavad Gita class. So this is our situation. We're in this material world, but we're not taking it seriously. We're not taking our fate seriously. We've been covered over. And therefore, we're trying to enjoy, as Bhaktivinoda says, enjoy this holocaust. You know, like a prisoner. In a prisoner. Oh, it's a good day. I get an extra helping of bread. You know, that's his standard now. He's been in jail for years, you know. The guy next in another bunk didn't attack me today. This is a really good day. Thank you. You know, in other words, our frame of reference for what is happiness and what is success has been very much truncated and crippled. So we should open our hearts and realize what the real goal is and the possibility is, as given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prema Padayate. He is the most munificent avatar because he's giving out, really, this prema, which is the ultimate goal. The prema dana, the wealth of prema, it includes liberation. It's far more than that. So we come in that line of Lord Chaitanya. He's giving us this method, this easiest method of Harinam Sankirtan. But along with it, he also came to preach Bhagavad Purana, this philosophical foundation. Both need to be there. To found our practices on a firm Shastic foundation and basis, and to practice, accept as duties that which is given by the Shastra and by the spiritual master. And then we can actually see our progress toward, as Krishna says in the previous verse, real happiness, perfection, and the ultimate goal. So I wanted to leave a little time for a couple of poems. I have a couple of poems queued up there. There's another slideshow on there. But if there's some discussion on these points, the main idea is that we are limited, our senses are limited, we can't really on our own understand what happiness is, what the goal is, how to get there, sadhya, sadhana, the goal and the process to get it. But by approaching the proper source, the pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada, especially through his books, Shastra, we can understand, strengthen our intelligence, and then accept as duties those things which will finally give us perfection and happiness in the spiritual world. So there's perfection right there. Radha and Krishna swinging. Any discussion? Oh, we have a question? No? Okay. Maybe after we chant a few of these poems. Now, I give two poems here, and they're meditations on activities in the spiritual world, but particularly they have a little lesson to them also. So, everyone got that in their mind? Beautiful painting, we all know. Here's this poem I wrote many years ago. Where blooming flowers spread their sweet perfumes, where clear Yamuna flows and songbirds sing, where soothing lovely light the land illumes, Sri Radha and Sri Krishna gently swing. This idol of their love in Braj's bowers forever charms their dearest devotees, whose heart Sri Krishna's sweetness overpowers, obscuring his prodigious potencies. Whatever in this world we know as love is just a shadow of the love they feel. The wise aspire to learn the secrets of devotion's path and taste that love ideal. I have to be honest, I thought of this poem when I saw Pranav's book, Wise Love. See? If you're wise, you'll aspire to learn the secrets of devotion's path. I'm gonna hope to read that book soon. So you see, this is reality. This is reality. Radha and Krishna swinging, all of the other pastimes. This is where we belong. Our philosophy, our understanding, as taught by Srila Prabhupada, is that we came from there. And we turned away from that and we became absorbed in this material energy a long time ago. And we're trying to find love in all the wrong places. We're trying to find this eternal love that we've lost in the things of this world, the relationships of this world. But they're just shadows of the original love that Krishna feels for Radharani and all of the gopis and everyone else and everything else in the spiritual world. So if we learn the secrets of devotion's path, in other words, we study the process Srila Prabhupada has given us according to the books he's given us, and then we can make our way back to that spiritual world and we'll be welcomed back there. And one more. This is Krishna running into the forest. I'm sure you know this. So, let's go, said Krishna. Don't delay at all. And he and Balaram began to run ahead of all their coward friends who called, Oh Krishna, Rama, let us join the fun. And off they went to Braj's forest haunts to play in every bower, grove, and sward. The boys would tease their friend with playful taunts, forgetting his position as the Lord. Sri Krishna is inviting us as well to join him in his pastimes which enthrall. The wise heed Krishna when they hear him tell, Let's go, my friends, do not delay at all. So that's more or less what our material life is. We're simply delaying, you see. When we slacken off in our sadhana, we put it off and put it off. This is Maya telling us it's not so urgent. This is why I like to say there's these two elements giving us incentive. One is the attraction of Krishna, which we experience in the holy name and the deities and the Sangha and everything else. But the other should be, and this we find extensively in the Shastra, Bhagavatam and others, descriptions and understanding of what this material world really is, of how we can't find peace here, we can't find happiness, the threefold miseries, birth, old age, disease, and death. Krishna says this is part of knowledge. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, dukkha, dosha, anudarshanam. So Krishna consciousness and bhakti yoga is a very serious endeavor. It's also very celebratory. There's wonderful festivals, and this is the ultimate goal, no question. But always keep in mind that we have to be serious and persevere to kick out the lingering abhadras and to kick out other tendencies for sense gratification so that we can learn to really relish at every moment Krishna's bhakti. This is another thing we've been discussing in the morning. How Gajendra's prayers were quoted. And I'll just share with this one thing. You know, how, first Prahlad Maharaj, in his famous prayer, he says, I'm not at all in trouble. I don't have any anxiety, my Lord, because at any moment I can chant your glories, sing your glories, and immerse my mind in an ocean of nectar. So I have no troubles at all. He's already proved it in his experience with Hiranyakashipu. Even though they threw him off a cliff and they tried to boil him in oil and crush him and poison him and every other way you can imagine to kill him, he remained equipoised because he was fixed on meditating on his Lord. So then he says, but I am lamenting for all these fools and rascals who are trying to enjoy this flickering happiness, and so I'm going to stay here to preach. So Gajendra, in his anxiety, in his crisis, you know, when he's praying to the Lord, he has this one prayer. I've never memorized these, but this one line always stuck with me. Ekanti no yasina kanchanatam vanchanti yevai bhagavat papanna atyadbutam tat charitam sumangalam dhyanta ananda sabugna mudra magna. So he says, the pure devotees, one-pointed, who want nothing else, nothing in this material world, when they sing the extremely wonderful, your extremely wonderful pastimes, ati adbhutam, tat charitam, sumangalam, which are very auspicious, they dive into an ocean of ananda. So this is where our pleasure should lie, in serving Krishna, hearing about Krishna, glorifying Krishna, serving his devotees. Serving Krishna's devotees is very pleasing to Krishna. All of these things, the more that we can find our solace and our pleasure in that, the less that the material world will allure us, the more we'll find ourselves purified. So this is just a little drop of the ocean of nectar that Srila Prabhupada has given us. And when we relish it, we'll see that the heart becomes purer and purer, softer and softer, and the material world becomes less and less attractive. Any other questions, comments? Oh, we have a comment or a question over here. Do we need a mic? Or you can just belt it out? Okay. Yeah, she's going to... Then you can... Oh, she's making garlands. Okay, so we have someone over here. That's even better. Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
So my question is very basic. Krishna creates the whole Maya and all of that.
Uh-huh.
And then he finds him to us. Why?
He does what?
He finds Krishna to us. I mean, we are trying to find Krishna.
Uh-huh.
Why does he do that?
Why does he make it so hard to find him?
No.
Why does he create Maya?
No, why he creates us to find himself to us? You see what I mean?
I think I know what you mean. There's a little phrase in the Upanishads, the Eko Bahusyam. The one became many. And the reason why is Rasa Vaisa. That meaning that he wants to enjoy Rasa. He wants to enjoy relationship. That's why he creates us. But there's a risk also. And the risk is because he wants an independent loving relationship. As Prabhupada famously said, Krishna doesn't want us to love him at the point of a revolver. Love me or else. That's not love, you see? So he gives us independence. That means we can not love him. And that's where we are. We've decided not to love him. Now we're trying to love him again. But the point is that He expands himself into unlimited varieties of living entities, jivas, so that he can enjoy these varieties of loving exchange, and basically these four relationships of conjugal love and parenthood and friendship and servantship. So we have rebelled. We're in kind of a reformatory, or you could say a prison house. Durga means fort or prison house. But it's not that we're abandoned forever. There's no eternal damnation. Absolutely not. You know, no matter how rebellious we get and demonic and get cast down into the lower species, we always come back up again because we get purified. And Krishna is making an effort to give us a chance. It has to be voluntary. You can't force. To cast off our foolish ways. And to learn again, revive the original love that is buried deep in our hearts. So that's what the whole process is. You know, Krishna's, it's not his fault that we did this. This is our own doing. But he's making an effort to give us all the chances possible that we can reform ourselves. And if we're intelligent, we'll do that.
So is that true that sooner or later, all of us are going to find him?
Yes. Yes, Prabhupada said, sooner or later, everybody goes back to Godhead. But it's our responsibility, our understanding of how fast we want to do it. We can do it in this very lifetime if we want, or it could take a million lifetimes. Yamaraj Guru.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your wonderful plan. When you were talking about great devotees in equal pose.
Equal poise.
I was thinking about Jesus Christ.
Yes, this is Eastern. I'm sorry, you're right. I should know.
Any comments about that?
Well, Srila Prabhupada did say, we accept Jesus as our spiritual master, famous statement. He's an example. Now, we have to preface and say, we don't really know if we have all, you know, everything about him and all of his words in their pristine state. But what we do have, certainly some statements, love thy God with all thy heart and all thy mind, 100% with that. You know, Prabhupada accepted, and, you know, thou shalt not kill, which he was the commandments from the Old Testament, but he said, I came to fulfill the law. So, and especially his courage, his realization, you know, and his lack of enmity. In other words, while he's being crucified, he's saying, please forgive them. I mean, it reminds us of Prahlad, you know, and Vasudev Dutt. Prabhupada said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Vasudev Dutt, who prayed, my dear Lord, if all these souls are suffering because of their sinful reactions, just put them on my head and let them take them back to Godhead. And Lord Chaitanya embraced him, and, you know, he said, well, don't worry, they're going back anyway, you don't have to take over. But he actually felt like that. That was the mood of Jesus, is that he was ready to sacrifice even his own life for the welfare of others by giving them Krishna consciousness. This is the hallmark of great devotees. Srila Prabhupada did the same thing. He certainly risked his life coming on that ship. He almost lost it. And even during the 12 years, amazing 12 years of preaching, he didn't slow down, even though his health was getting weak. I mean, someone, you know, people of that age and in that condition don't just keep flying around or flying. I mean, I just could make, you know, two trips a year and it takes it out of me. What to speak of every 3-4 days going to different places. So Prabhupada was giving his life energy for us. And that's the hallmark. And Jesus had that same, you know, in his time, and he was preaching according to the time and place. But he certainly showed the greatest marks of a pure saint in each other. So we revere him, we respect him. What happened with Christianity, I won't get into that, but Jesus Christ, his teachings, you know, we accept. Okay, we have one? No, oh, go ahead, Ramiya Prabhu. Sorry, I didn't say
that. Well, it seems that, you know, the souls, they have a problem that they, at least initially or maybe for some time, don't either understand Maya, don't recognize her, or don't understand her properly. And therefore, they think that so many things are happening by their power, their arrangements, and whatever. And what awakens one to come out of that?
Well, again, the morning, we're reading in the morning, again, you'll find in the Bhagavatam, what is the cause of things? How do things actually happen? And, you know, we're, false ego, ahankara, means I'm the doer. That's what it means. I'm the main doer, the soul doer. We are one element in the five aspects of action, but not the predominant one or the final determinant one. So the idea is that one of the ways in which Maya works is that she covers our knowledge of herself, that we don't think that there's such a thing as Maya, or there's even such a thing as God. This is part of our illusion. And we become absolutely convinced of it. We write books, we go on YouTube and TV, and we preach it, you know. And this is part of the material energy. And this is why there's such a battle. Prabhupada said it's always a battle between the theist and the non-theist. That's why, you know, devotees always have trouble. When you're actually teaching the real thing, I mean, it's extremely revolutionary. Basically, you're telling us, and we all have to go through this, really, except some of us who were raised in the society, but in Vedic society or as devotees, that everything that you think about, you know, is true, is false. You know, it may not be that starkly presented, but ultimately that's what it is. You know that famous verse by Prabodhananda Saraswati? Dante the Daya Trinakam says, "Oh sadhu, hey sadhava," this is, it begins the verse, "I approach you with a straw in my teeth. You're very learned and very wise, you know. Now please give up everything you thought you knew and take shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet." This is a preaching method. So the idea is that it's meant to bring out a revolution. Tadbhava Visargo, Janatagadabha, is that it's completely contrary. It's 180 degrees, you know, ultimately. So naturally, people are committed to what they've been taught, what they believe, what they've lived by their whole lives. And you're telling me that it's completely wrong, you know, then I'll punch you in the nose. You know, I mean, this is the idea. So we have very, very barriers to accepting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And this is why the successful preacher, he doesn't start with all the heavy philosophy, you know, come and take prasadam. You know, come to this festival and just, you know, dance with us. And while you're at it, chant a little bit, you know. And as soon as you start chanting and coming into the Sangha, you get a taste and you're open to hear some of the philosophy, you know, and you take a book. So it's a great problem. You're in the modes of nature, you're covered. The very word God is anathema to you. I mean, you have people running around like that. So as devotees, we have to rack our brains how to present this philosophy in such a way that people can take it, it's palatable enough that you begin to take it and become purified. It's difficult. And even some who have taken it and then rejected it. That happens too, but from offenses. So it's a struggle. But this is what the Kali Yuga is all about. It's a difficult time. And therefore there's a special dispensation to just chant Hare Krishna, and everything could be affected that way. Okay, I don't know what happened to the clock. There used to be a clock there. Now it's back here? Yeah. I know it's broken. Okay, so I'm losing track. So, can I just end with one quick poem? Okay, this is a quick poem. Now this has a blessing at the end, so it's worth it. So this one, I don't have any visual notes, so you can turn that off. But you can look at the beautiful faces of the deities, because it's about Vrindavan. It's based on the beginning of the Venu Geet chapter in the 10th canto. Vrindavan's rivers, lakes, and hills ring out with charming hums and trills as flocks of birds and maddened bees rejoice among the flowering trees. To those idyllic woods and glens repairs Govinda with his friends Sri Rama and the cowherd boys to taste the most exquisite joys. And as they walk along the way, absorbed in herding and in play, Sri Krishna, beauty absolute, begins to blow his mystic flute. With pika plume upon his head and fragrant flower on each ear, he enters Braj's woods with tread sublime, a dancer without peer. His golden yellow raiment glows, his garland reaches to his knees, and from his lips the nectar flows and fills his flute with melodies. As Krishna thus begins his day, with friends who sing his glory sweet, he beautifies the forest way with fine impressions of his feet. Samadhi culminates in this, to always see this scene of bliss within your heart, and outside too. May Krishna give this boon to you. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari. Hari Krishna. All glories to the Prabhupada.